Brew Strong is brought to you by Blickman Engineering, home of the top-tier brewing stand. Visit them online at blickmanengineering.com.
Brewers, it's time for the beer radio you've been looking for. This is the show that dispels myths, tackles the toughest topics, and makes no apologies for geeking out on beer. Hosted by two guys that drink before they think, Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. This is Brew Strong.
Hey, howdy, hey, my broom brothers and sisters.
Hello, friends.
I think greetings.
I got to stick with that, really.
You can't beat such a classic.
I think you're right. I think you're right. People told me much the same. So they say, Palmer, quit trying so hard.
Right. Just stick. You came out with a golden gem the very first time, and you got to stick with it.
Okay.
You are a greetings kind of guy.
I think so. I've said it to people at work, and it doesn't seem to generate quite the same buzz, but at least here, I think here now it works.
With people drinking heavily.
Yeah.
Every time they hear heretic.
That's right.
You know, then they'll, yeah, it makes sense. Greetings makes sense.
Now, when you came up with heretic, were you thinking like, you know, moose and squirrel, hare and tick, or, you know, kind of bring
on the hair of an ass.
Yeah. No?
Oh, I don't know. I'm like,
what were you thinking?
I was going through the synonym dictionary and, trying to find a word that wasn't already taken by some brewery. And I don't know. It just fits.
Yeah, it does.
I don't know. I like, be a heretic. Don't drink ordinary beer.
That's good.
Yeah, it's like do something different. Don't don't drink ordinary craft beer. Yeah. You know, if you like something different, just drink it, enjoy it. If you like to brew something different than everybody else, do it. You know, if you're, ass cheese dick white beer is your favorite, then fine, brew it, drink it, enjoy it. You know, the hell with everybody else. I did that whole 3 years of style shows with my buddy John Plisse, and I love that. You know, it was fantastic, and I think it's a great education in brewing. But you don't have to necessarily brew those beers. You should understand how those beers are brewed and be able to, replicate those beers. That's important. But if once you can, then that's your gateway to brew your own. Yeah. High quality beers. That's your chance to really step out and do something different.
Yeah.
So, don't hesitate in that. Well, and not hesitating to step out, our fine sponsor, John Blickman, BlickmanEngineering.com.
Right.
Blickman with a two N's.
Yeah,
BlickmanEngineering.com. Yeah. Great guy and just I think, he looks at the brewing process and he's like, well, that could be done better. That could be done better. I think that's kind of his mantra. It's like, he's not going to reinvent brewing, which has been for thousands of years, so I don't see how anybody could. But he's going to reinvent the tools you use to,
make them work better.
Yeah. Make it work better. Make your brewing process better. Make it more enjoyable. Make it more consistent. All the things that, we all geek out over, on this show. So, check out BlickmanEngineering.com. They're great people, and they got great products. One of the things that Mr. John Blickman is paying for, besides the show so you can listen to it for free, is he is paying for Mr. John Palmer, Mr. John Blickman, and myself to come
out. Mr. Jamil Zainashev.
To come out to your location, your location, and brew a batch of beer with you, or you can come out to my house and brew with me on my top tier system, and Palmer and Blickman, and we'll all hang out. We'll have a good time, and then you come down to the studios here at the Rat Pad in Pacheco and do a Brew Strong show with us. So, in order to enter, if you bought a Top Tier system since I think it was September when we first started talking about this through the end of January of 2011. Mm-hmm. You're entered. That's all you got to do.
He's going to pick a name, and that person will have the opportunity to meet us.
Just let us know. You want us to fly out to your place? We will. If you want us to, if you want to come out to my place, you're more than welcome. We'll have a good time. Everybody will come up. It'll be a blast. I kind of hope that they're going to come up to my place. I really do. Just because, they'll come down to the studio with us. Yeah. You know, we'll swing by Heretic, of course. We'll, do barbecue, all sorts of stuff. Heretic for all these in the chat.
No, for a minute there, I thought you said Heretic of Horse.
Heretic of Horse.
Yes.
The horse heretic, yes, mm-hmm. absolutely, of horse.
Didn't make much sense.
Well, and one more thing: if you're a big supporter of the Brewing Network, you're going to want to the holiday season, get yourself to the Brewing Network store. Right. All sorts of goodies there.
We're going to have lots of signed books available.
Lots of signed books: How to Brew,
mm-hmm.
Brewing Classic Styles, the Yeast Book.
That's a great
by
book.
Homeboy and Dogmeat.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fantastic book. I recommend that those guys really know what they're doing. It's a lot of fun, and there's great clothing, lots of hop grenade stuff, hats, Brew Strong shirts. I'm wearing a Brew Strong shirt right now. I love these Brew Strong shirts.
Me too.
It's just I would wear it every day, but I'd look like I think every day.
I think you do wear it every day.
Pretty close, but you should don't buy it for yourself. Buy it for your family. Everybody, whether they are into brewing or not, you should buy them a Brew Strong shirt. Get one for grandma.
Yeah. Give a shirt here, grandma. Here for your birthday, I got you a Brew Strong shirt.
Oh, thank you, Sonny. What's Brew Strong though? I don't understand.
Oh, it's a show about beer. Brewing beer, and it's a good show.
Oh, precious child, I appreciate that, but I don't like beer.
Coffee then. You like you brew strong coffee, I suppose.
I don't like my coffee strong though. I like my coffee, very very mellow and with a little sugar. The cream and
tea, grandma, tea. How about that?
I don't like strong tea either.
Well, look. Use it as a window rag or some sort of rag. Then it's
no,
fine.
No. Listen to me, little cocksucker. I don't care for strong tea, strong coffee, no beer. Give me a good prison. What the hell is the matter with you?
Give me a good prison.
Well, maybe if you kick the shit out of grandma. you could donate to the Brewing. Instead, maybe donate to the
Brewing Network.
The memory of grandma at the Brewing Network. The brewingnetwork.com. There's a donate now button. You can go ahead and for a couple of bucks, you can help support the Brewing Network and find programming like this that abuses your grandmother. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Never yell at your grandmother.
Right. And before I forget, we got another new sponsor for Brew Strong. I think you guys are going to enjoy this one. It is AdamandEve.com. And it's not just for the guys. It's for the gals, too. It's for anybody. Adam and Eve, they've got a specialty item there for all you folks. No matter, which way you go. They've got sex toys, vibrators, lingerie, adult movies, sexy extras. They got all sorts of good stuff to, enjoy yourself. Or enjoy yourself with somebody else. That's even better. All you need to do, go there, check out the site, adamandeve.com. You spell out the Adam and Eve, or you can just say adameve.com. And if you enter the code Jamil, J-A-M-I-L, you'll get 50% off one item. You get 3 free adult DVDs. You get a free extra gift, sensual gift, and you get free shipping. So for just a couple of bucks, you're going to get yourself quite the collection of goodies. So check it out, adamandeve.com, new sponsor for Brew Strong. All right, so today we're going to do some more Q&A. We're trying to catch up on our backlog of Q&A because, if you email the brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com, we don't want to leave any email unturned. We don't want to, let you go. If you got an immediate question to be answered, you should individually email us with your rapid needs.
Right.
But if you hit the Brew Strong at thebrewingnetwork.com, we want to make sure we eventually get to those, and we will. It might take us a little bit, but we're kind of stepping up the pace, eh?
Right. We're going to start doing more Q&A shows to make sure that we get through all of your emails. And
initially, I don't think we were thinking about that.
No.
Because we thought they would be stupid questions from morons.
Mm-hmm.
And then we look at the questions, and they're like actually good questions from smart morons. People. Knowing what they're, you know, they're asking actually intelligent questions.
Yeah, well, they have no other show to
ask them to. That don't have, like, you know, easy answers to. And it's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, maybe we should be answering these questions.
Yeah.
So that's what we're going to do. We're going to knock this out. All right, so we're going to start answering your questions when we come back from this break.
And
back soon.
When you hear Blickman Engineering, think innovation, passion, quality, and customer service. Blickman Gear is designed by brewers to give you a sense of pride in your equipment. At Blickman, they know what makes brewing a pain and build gear that makes it fun. Like the intuitive beer gun, a completely different approach to filling bottles. The Therminator wort chiller, a new take on a plate chiller that's sized for flow, performance, and the high groundwater temps homebrewers face every day. The Brewmometer, a brilliant weldless thermometer design with brewing parameters right on the dial. The Auto Sparge, ultimate simplicity for preventing an overflow or running your mash tun dry. And much more, like the modular top-tier brewing stand, conical fermenters, and their Boilermaker brew pots. With more cutting-edge equipment coming soon, keep up with the latest from Blickman at BlickmanEngineering.com and stay on the cutting edge.
BN Army, you think you're badass? Well, you are. Kind of. Like badass, but without the balls to blow something up. Hop Tech in patriotic Dublin, California recognizes your nearly badassness with a BN Army discount on every order. But there's something those boys and girls in the real Army should know. If you have an APO address or a scan of an active PX card, Hop Tech salutes you as an actual badass and offers their thanks with a 15% discount on every purchase. That's the Hop Tech way of saying thanks to all active military personnel. 15% off ingredients, kits, equipment, as well as games, books, gifts, and more, all at hoptech.com. Whichever army you're a member of, any branch of the military, or the BN Army, HopTech in Dublin says thank you with great discounts. Call 800-DRY-HOPS, visit the store in Dublin, California, or go to hoptech.com. HopTech, serving homebrewers for 28 years.
Nico, listen, our lawyers said that we had to do this for 1 hour, and after this, we don't have to talk to each other for 3 more months until the next meeting.
Kids. Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm supposed to have more lines. I'm the professional. Hey, it's Sully.
And I'm Nico.
And we opened the 21st Amendment 10 years ago at 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park, to make great beer and have a great time doing it.
That's right, because to us, the 21st Amendment is more than just the right to make beer. It's the right to experiment, to be innovative, and just do things differently. And so now, we're putting our craft beer in cans.
That's right, cans. You can find our world-famous Heller High Watermelon Wheat Beer at Brew Free or Die IPA in the Northeast, Northwest, parts of the Midwest, and Alaska in cans and on draft. So next time you're at your local neighborhood pub or good beer store, be sure to ask for 21st Amendment in cans.
Because everyone likes it in the can.
Tasty Crack Cans.
Tasty Crack Can.
And now, Northern Brewer brings you another installment of The Time Brewers!
When last we left our heroes, they found themselves in 1842 in the province of Bohemia.
Yo, this era jerky. All the beers is murky.
What ho, friends, a male alewife.
I don't know what I'm doing, so I got this dark malt, yeah? More stinky dark beer, yeah!
No, sir. Please, wait. Just a moment.
Aye, a package from the future from Northern Brewer.
Use the Pilsner malt, my good man.
And the Sots hops, sucker. They ain't noble like Queen Victoria, but you can use Sterling from Portland to Astoria. Let your wort caramelize and let melanodins harmonize in a long boil. Keep your starter undercover with aluminum foil. Boo.
And use a 1,000 bog myrtle.
Northern Brewer is your one-stop homebrew supplier throughout the entire Fermento chronosphere. The widest selection of quality malt, hops, yeast, $7.99 flat rate shipping, and get your nasty ass bog myrtle back to the dark ages, Brother Abelard.
Hey, this golden lager with the happy hops pretty damn good. Thanks, Time Brewers. Thanks, Northern Brewer.
Our work here is done, my friends. Now, to wherever we are next, we did.
Tune in next time for the continuing adventures of the Time Brewers.
Hilo, what's it feel like?
Take awesome and multiply it by two.
Yeah!
Spraying live beer radio all over your face.
Can't get any better than this, baby.
It's the Brewing Network.
Back to your hosts, Jamil Zainasheff and John Palmer. Putting the testicles in technical. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. Q&A show. Give me what the chat's got.
The chat, they really want to know what beer you guys are drinking right now. I forgot last show, and I got a lot of slack for it, and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, bite me.
It's Iron Springs Black Magic Rye.
8%.
8%, yeah.
So there.
And I believe you said the last show you were here, it was a little bit harsh, and so it seems like it settled in the keg a bit.
Yeah, we did Kenya Brew It, and it was really very, you know, tannic, acidic, and just a bit too much. But, you know, after sitting for a month, it's some of that harsh bitterness has dropped out.
Yeah.
Nice. It's chocolatey now.
It is. It, I like it.
Yeah. Takes a little time.
Great. Well, let's do some more chat questions. What do you think?
Sure. Okay.
All right. Here we go. Boiler Brew in the chat says, not sure if this has been covered before. When adding a simple sugar like sucrose to dry out a beer, is it better to add the sugar into the boil or as a syrup after some fermentation has taken place?
Depends on how much you're adding, for one thing.
Right. Depends on the gravity of the boil of the beer too.
Mm-hmm. The decision that you're facing with adding simple sugars is that if you present too much simple sugar to the yeast, they don't have to develop the enzymes to ferment simple sugars that they do for maltose and maltotriose. So those are in normal beer worts. The disaccharide maltose and the trisaccharide maltotriose are the predominant sugars in barley wort. If you present them with a lot of sucrose or glucose, then they don't bother generating the enzymes and they just ferment those simple sugars and then stop. That situation is going to happen most often when you're brewing, say, like 20% simple sugar,
30%, yeah.
If you're only adding, you know, some as an accent, you know, 5-10%, probably not serious, and you can add it straight to the boil, and it's going to kick up the overall percentage of glucose and sucrose in the beer, but still maltose and maltotriose will still be predominant. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to do the high sugar beers, then it's better to add the syrup to the fermenter after several days have passed.
Right, high sugar and high gravity, especially you want them to consume as much of the maltose as they can when you're doing a high gravity beer and you want it to finish dry. So then I tend to always delay the sugars to the end, unless, like John's saying, it's 5-10%, you can get away with it. But if you're having trouble getting beer to attenuate fully in those high gravity beers, start without the sugar, and then towards the end, because those simple sugars, the yeast can just pretty much, whip them across the, glucose across the, cell wall, and it's
right.
It's used. When you get up to sucrose and you get the disaccharides,
they've got to migrate those and use an enzyme.
Right. They got to break them down and, bring them in, and it's much more effort. So You know, that's really where it breaks down to.
Great. Sorry about that. The Mad Hopper, also in the chat, wants to know, I build a badass recirculation mash system. Got efficiency of 89%. Too high. Thought of doing a no sparge to lower the efficiency. How thin is too thin of a mash for no sparge? He says he's always heard not to mash too thin because of astringency.
You can get up to 4-5 quarts per pound. You're still good there.
That's about the borderline.
Yeah, I wouldn't go beyond 5 quarts per pound.
Great. Straightforward. Love it. Cali Pro wants to know, he recently brewed a Baltic Porter that due to an uncontrolled temperature drop, the beer failed to attenuate lower than 1030. He kegged it up, and it's too sweet for his taste. So he degassed it and transferred it to the fermenter that had a Schwartz beer. Seems to be working out well and re-fermented down to 1020. While it seemed to work out pretty well and is now tasting pretty nice, he's wondering if there's any downside of re-fermenting beer using this technique, because he was thinking about doing it again if he ever had an under-attenuated beer.
As long as you're not picking up any oxygen through your process, then oxygen, contamination, bacteria, wild yeast, or, you know, yeast breaking down in your beer, as long as you avoid those things, then it doesn't matter at all. I think those are the only things to worry about, right?
Right. Right.
Great. Sorry, just filtering through some of these.
So good to go. I think, go ahead and use it next time as well.
Mm-hmm. PSU Homebrewer wants to know, he's doing his first lager, and I would like to know if there is a difference when lagering in a carboy as compared to lagering in a bottle, and which is the better method. I'm assuming he means the a better bottle or a plastic carboy. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Wow. Or no, maybe even bottled beers, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe lagering in a carboy versus mm-hmm. bottling it already.
Right.
Well, if he's doing a lager beer and he's done, you know, if he's pitched the right amount of yeast and gotten a good, healthy primary fermentation, the lagering step or the lagering of the beer is really just clarification of the beer.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't necessarily need to be done in the carboy. If he's going to leave it, you know, in the refrigerator for a couple of months to lager, mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't do it in a better bottle, because yeah. of their oxygen permeability over glass. Mm-hmm. If he's going to do it in bottles, then I would definitely make sure he's got the fermentation done before he bottles that beer, because once it's in the bottle, a lot less yeast available mm-hmm. to do any conditioning that the beer might need.
Hmm. Well, you know, and one thing, you know, people are enamored with this whole, oh, I'm going to lager my beer and it's going to magically make it better.
Right.
You know, it's all dependent on your initial fermentation, how well you do with that. And, you know, I would raise the temperature at the end of fermentation, make sure everything's cleaned up. But if you do a good job of that, then you really don't need any sort of lagering. Mm-hmm. You need some cold conditioning time. But, you know, the whole magic of lagering, well, if you're dropping your yeast below, if you're dropping the beer below 40 degrees Fahrenheit, then really nothing's happening anyways. You know,
yeast-wise.
I mean, the yeast are really not doing anything. You know, they're doing it so slowly that if you really want yeast activity, keep it warmer, you know, or warm it up. You know, the yeast do better when you warm them up. They become active. They do all the things you want them to do. They've already finished making all those flavors and things like that. One of the things that can happen is, you know, if you crash cool a beer after fermentation, they will actually, lager yeast will actually express more esters than if you slowly lower the temperature. And I think this is part of the myth of lagering is, well, if I slowly lower the temperature to lagering temperature and let it sit, it's a cleaner beer. Versus if you crash cool it, the lager yeast actually express more esters in that crash cooling period, and you end up with a more estery beer. So maybe people are thinking that. So you want to slowly lower the temperature. You know, and then if you want yeast activity, you got to keep it 40 or above. Otherwise, I think, you know, proper fermentation to start with, and you know, starting with a colder temperature, proper pitching rates, oxygen, ramping the temperature up. We've talked about so many times towards the end of fermentation, ramping that temperature up, letting the yeast finish what they're doing, and then you slowly lower the temperature down, get the yeast off of there, let the beer sit for a while, and you let those fines drop out, you let the, you know, chemical actions happen. That's what makes a great lager beer. But so, you know, whether it's a bottle or a keg, I don't think it matters. You know, oxygen ingress makes a big difference, like John's saying. Right. You know, other than that, if you've done the right fermentation, then, you know, the rest is just settling cold and letting all that stuff drop out. So it doesn't really matter. All right.
Great.
Let's take one more from the chat, if you got one more, and then let's take a break.
Okay, let's do it. Sex Panther in the chat room.
Okay.
Yeah, just waiting for that to sink in. Sex Panther.
Oh, sweet. Sex Panther.
He writes in, just wondering what hop breed would give the absolute cleanest, smoothest bittering for a pale ale. I'd like to showcase the flavor and smell and not have the bittering intrude.
I think a lot of that is water profile, wouldn't you say, John?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Read that again, JP.
I deleted it. He wants the, I think, well, the cleanest, know, low, smoothest low, hop
low
possible.
Cohumilone?
Yeah.
Lowest cohumilone. Yeah. Okay. The cleanest bitterness. He wants flavor and aroma to show through and no harsh character from the bitterness. If I'm interpreting that right. So yeah, low cohumulone hop,
mm-hmm.
one of the more modern varieties versus say yep. something like Bullion or
Horizon maybe.
Yeah, Horizon's a good one. But there's another Centennial, some of the modern high office that have
Magnum.
Very low
Magnum.
Magnum's a good one.
That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah. I also prefer those in condoms.
Yeah. Do we make balloon animals out of them? What do you do? We'll talk later. We'll talk at the break about those because I don't understand what that means.
Right. Yeah, I guess. But if it's kind of sounded like he was looking to not have the beer bitter, but just to have hop aroma.
Oh, bitter but clean and firm without really,
yeah,
all those other ancillary flavors going on. I would go with something like a Horizon or a Magnum, something like that, and mm-hmm. you know, watch your water profile. I think this is one of the things. I'm really, you know, somebody who, you know, poo-poo's screwing with water too much, but I think in terms of how sharp your bittering is and how punchy and aggressive it is, I think water profile means a lot. And, you know, the amount of sulfates in there and, that really changes the character of it. And mm-hmm. all the, chlorides and things like that.
Right.
Those are really going to affect your perception of bittering.
Mm-hmm.
So, as does the malt profile and attenuation, the type of yeast you use, some yeast and the pitching rate. You know, the amount of cell surface, all that's going to affect, you know, that end perception. But, you know, so it's not just a hop. If you were in, and also, all right, so all these things plus, but if you're a brewer going, gosh, you know, everything's so sharp and bitter and, you know, seems so, you know, I would start to wonder about, you know, contamination and really thin beers and, you know, ones with, you know, giant bubbles and things like that. If that's what you're seeing, then, you know, start looking for contamination, thinning out the beer and not really being able to support that bittering.
Yeah.
Otherwise, then the second thing I would look for is, you know, Horizon, Magnum, you know, low cohumulone, high alpha hops, and watch your water. And get, you know, a good average water. Don't go aggressive towards one side or the other.
Right.
And you should end up with a beer that's, you know, got a firm bittering, but it's not aggressive. It's not offensive in any way.
Yeah. Watch your sodium levels, too. If you're using softened water, probably better not to use softened water. Go with the some store-bought drinking water because the high sodium levels will also react with the hop bitterness and make it a little more harsh. So, yeah, everything what Jamil said and that.
And more. All right.
Let's take a short break. And when we come back, more of your questions after this.
Since 1921, Munden's has been a provider of quality malted grain and extract.
What did he just say? What did he say?
That's 90 years of locally sourced grain for home brewers and professional brewers alike. All farmed within 50 miles of our malt houses.
What? I can't understand what this guy said.
Last part.
Whole and crushed malts, including wheat and peated malt, liquid extract, hopped and unhopped, as well as dried malt extract. Everything from beginner home brewer kits to all the ingredients an advanced home brewer needs.
Something about trains?
What
language is this guy speaking?
He's from Austria.
Munden's is proudly serving brewers in 54 countries and honored to be a leader in malting.
Can you understand this guy?
No.
That's a really weird language.
Ask for Munden's malt and malt extract at your local home brew shop.
Munden's, for brewing, distilling, and baking. Quality malted grain and extract for 90 years. Make your malt Munden's.
When I order a beer, I want my server to know more about it than I do. I want someone who enjoys good beer and loves helping others enjoy it too. I want someone who knows how to pour a perfect pint for every beer style. I want a Cicerone.
The Cicerone Certification Program is creating the type of people who help you enjoy great beer. Home brewers and craft beer lovers know beer is more flavorful and complex than ever, and it takes some serious knowledge to store and serve beer right. Cicerones know beer. There are three levels in the Cicerone Program: Certified Beer Server, Certified Cicerone, and Master Cicerone. Cicerones are truly the sommeliers of beer. The best beer locations have a Certified Cicerone on staff. Relaxed and unpretentious, Cicerone are tested on storing and serving beer, beer styles, flavor and tasting, the brewing process and ingredients, and pairing food with beer. Learn more about your next beer guide at Cicerone.org. Certified Cicerone, because it takes top talent to present a perfect pint.
Hi, this is Push from the Brewing Network, and I want to tell you about the Brewmaster's Warehouse and how you can get 10% off your next order. I'm a pretty techie guy, but I've never seen an online store like this. It's awesome. Go to brewmasterswarehouse.com and click on Brew Builder. You can whip up a custom recipe so easily even Sven could do it. Seriously, it's slick. You can share your recipe with your own logo and notes to the Brewmaster's database if you want. And the best part, it keeps a running tally of the beer you're building while you're doing it. Then, bam, click Buy Recipe and your cart is filled and ready to go with helpful suggestions in case you forgot something. This thing is amazing. Brewmaster's Warehouse is run the way a home brewer would do it, with great service, fast turnaround, and $6.99 flat rate shipping. Brewmaster's Warehouse and the Brew Builder blew me away. Check it out today at brewmasterswarehouse.com. I'm serious. And don't forget to put BNARMY in the discount code box for 10% off your order. Check out brewmasterswarehouse.com. Cheers.
Do you support the Brewing Network? Do you brew your own? Are you looking for an economical, fun, and legal way to do both? Subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine and do just that. All year long, Brew Your Own will surprise you, entertain you, and educate you with articles on beer and brewing from authors like the Brewing Network's very own Jamil Zainashev and John Palmer. Each issue is a full pint of brewing techniques, homebrew stories, tips and photos, projects to make yourself, and recipes for the avid home brewer. Get your tough questions answered by Mr. Wizard and polish your style accuracy with Jamil. A portion of every subscription goes to the Brewing Network, so subscribe today at byo.com/brewingnetwork or just click the BYO logo on the Brewing Network homepage and support a fantastic hobby and your favorite broadcaster. Brew Your Own, the how-to homebrew beer magazine.
Back to the beer guys that make other beer guys look like wine guys. Brew strong.
All right, we're back in the middle of, is this Q&A show number 3?
Yes, it is.
Dang.
We're pounding them out.
The beers or the questions?
Both.
Yes.
Pounding down the beers.
Whatever needs pounding out.
Yeah. Whatever needs
I got a quarter panel you guys can work on.
I'm ready to pound.
All right.
Pound whatever needs pounding.
You ready to take a phone call?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Westco. Westco, you with us?
Hey, guys, what's up?
What's happening, man?
Hey, brother.
Hey, first off, I'd like to say your yeast book, Jamil, is long overdue.
I tried to get it done as fast as I could. Don't be giving me shit about how long it took me to get it done.
No. I wasn't giving you shit. I was saying it's been long overdue.
Well, and I know. I know.
People have a source to go to.
I know. Thank you, brother.
Yeah. No, it's great. I actually have a question from your book.
Uh-huh.
And I'm assuming that Chris White wrote this part, but he mentions when you brew a lager beer, you know, to do your typical pitch close to 50, mm-hmm. and then after the first 3 or 4 days of ester production, after that, then slowly rises up to 65, or I think he even mentioned 68.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you typically say pitch around 46, 48, go to 50, and then at the very, very tail end, raise it a little bit for a de-rest, stuff like that. So I was curious, what would be the difference in having a schedule of pitching like 48, wait 3 or 4 days and slowly rise 65 versus just keeping at 50 and letting it finish?
Actually, I wrote that part. And the thing is...
Here's the thing.
You want to start on a lower, you know, controlled temperature. You want to control your growth and not get excessively wild growth. And wild growth is, you know, happens through, you know, high oxygen levels, you know, high temperatures, things like that. And that's when you get those thin cell walls, you get those fusel alcohols, you get all that stuff, right? So you start with a lower temperature. You start, you know, I've started, you know, at 44. I let it naturally raise to 50, then I hold it at 50, and I go from there and, you know, just let it raise up. You can, you know, wait till the end and raise it up. I think, you know, I wrote in the book, you know, probably, you know, what you're targeting is a fermentation temperature of 50 to start, and then, you know, just start raising it up. After the first 48 hours, all your growth is done. And you can start to raise your temperature up after that. So, yeah, you can wait a little while and then raise your temperature or whatever. As long as you wait that initial period where the growth and a lot of the flavor development is really kind of locked in, then you can go ahead and raise the temperature up. And the purpose of raising the temperature up becomes, you know, diacetyl reduction, acetaldehyde reduction, things like that. Towards the end, you want to make sure that those compounds are being reduced, that attenuation is really, you know, fully happening, and that, you know, you're really attenuating out the beer. And, you know, that's the yeast depend on temperature as a signal for a lot of. If you let the temperature remain constant, then you know, they won't quite be as active towards the end, you know, and maybe you won't quite do as well. But if you raise the temperature, it become a little more active, and you really do clean those things up. You know, the thing to avoid is letting the temperature fall towards the end. And so many homebrewers, this is the difference between pro brewers and homebrewers. This is the difference. Temperature control. And, you know, pro brewers will, you know, control their fermentation temperatures all the way through pitching to the end, and they'll make sure that their beer attenuates well and everything's done right, and they absorb all these compounds. And homebrewers, for the most, will except for listeners of this show, for the most, they'll just let their beer, you know, go with whatever temperature is ambient temperature, and then, you know, the yeast are no longer producing heat, and the temperature falls off, and then, you know, the beer doesn't attenuate well, and it doesn't absorb all these compounds, and it's not as good a beer, and it's a critical stage of fermentation. So if you can, you know, control that temperature, and it sounds like you are, and you're very attentive to what's happening, you know, you're going to make a great beer if you can just raise the temperature towards the end. So that's kind of the guidance of the book, I think, was I want to make sure people understood raising the temperature, starting out cooler and raising the temperature. But, you know, a lot of people don't want to start, you know.
Yeah, instead of starting out warm and cooling towards the end.
I think Whitey and a lot of other folks don't want to start at 44 and raise up. So I think, you know, I said, well, okay, 50 and, you know, go up. The point is, you know, ferment fairly cool at the beginning, go up. Don't start hot, go down and go up, or, you know, So that was kind of, does that answer the question? Or?
Well, yeah, maybe I should ask it in a different way. So the way I typically ferment lagers, and I do mostly lagers, or at least I have for the last years, I do pitch around 48, let it slowly warm up to 50. Mm-hmm. And then after, you know, 10 days just before it starts slowing down, mm-hmm. you know, I'll let it go to 55 and let it finish out. And I've never had off flavors mm-hmm. since I've done it that way. Mm-hmm. I just don't get them anymore. I mean, my first couple lagers really sucked, but mm-hmm. after I understood that, I guess my question is, if I were to do that, and if I keep it at 50 fermenting and only raise it to 55, what's the difference between that and then a lager that I ferment for 3 or 4 days at 50 then raised to 65?
Right. Quicker.
I mean, there's two different schedules, so I'm wondering what kind of impact it would have on the beer.
So I think what you're doing now, you could do a little bit faster. Instead of waiting 10 days, I think you could slowly, after the first 3 or 4 days, start adding a degree or two of temperature and raising it up to like 60.
Right.
And you could do that, and I think your beer would finish out faster. So that's really the only thing. I bet you,
it would change the taste profile?
I bet you it would. I bet you it would. If we were to do, if you were to, have 10 gallons and split it off and, this one stayed steady and then I raised it at the end and this one I kept raising up, I bet you it would be slightly different. And we would taste the difference in a triangle test. But it'd be so close that you wouldn't really, you'd go, so what? But you'd figure
one
that
you prefer. What would be different?
It's going to be, levels of, some of these compounds. It's going to be, perception of, like malt character and attenuation and things like that. It's going to be subtle things. I mean, it's going to be so close.
You're going to go,
this one I like, this one I don't. Or, I like this one better than this one.
Try.
They're both excellent. This one I like better. That's what you're going to come up with.
All right. Well, cool.
No,
but that's an awesome question.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, all right, thanks, brother.
Thanks, Ben. Keep it real.
That's a good question.
Yeah, it is.
That's good stuff. The guy's, so focused on, those little things that actually make a big difference in beer.
Yeah.
Versus, so you're like, decoction, or, it's like, no, the guy's focused on the right thing. It's like, here's the difference. Which one's going to make the beer I prefer? Well, it's hard to say.
Yeah.
But, I think he's doing a good job right now. And, I think he'd go a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
But, faster isn't necessarily better.
Right.
Awesome. Well, that's all the chat questions we have. Let's go back to some more email questions, which if you need your question answered, you can go to brewstrong@thebrewingnetwork.com. This one is from Mike. He goes, "Dear Brew Strong," and I like the intro. It's very nice.
Yes.
You're on a friendly basis. I have a few questions regarding the pH of beer throughout the brewing process. We all know pH is important in the mash, but how about in the kettle, fermenter, or in the bottle and keg? What impact can it have on flavor? I do my best to adjust mash pH with salts because I do not like the taste of acids in the finished product. Are there ways to manipulate the process to produce the best tasting beer? Thanks for all your help.
Okay. Well, the most general aspect first, the pH of the beer will affect its flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And
pH of water affects the flavor.
Right. Yeah. It's, it goes back to our Water Ganza shows where we talk about spaghetti sauce as you try different spaghetti sauces, one is maybe a lower pH, a little sharper, more acidic. Other would be a higher pH. Tastes a little more smooth, a little more rounded.
Mm-hmm.
Same way with your beer.
Sweeter.
Yeah. Sweeter, mellower, or sharper, a little more bitter, a little more assertive.
But it also punches up flavors like, citrus and, all those fruity flavors.
Yeah.
Do better with some acidity.
Yeah. So a lot of, you can experience it in pale ales. You can experience it in stouts. The acidity or the pH of the beer makes a big difference in how those flavors are expressed.
Mm-hmm.
The hard part of his question is that we don't have good handles for controlling pH in the fermenter or in the keg.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can, you know, we've talked about in how to brew and in Waterganza how to control mash pH. And when you control mash pH to the right level, generally you get a half point drop in pH throughout fermentation as CO2 is evolved and alcohol is produced and so on. And in general, you end up with an appropriate beer pH when you're done. If it's a little to one side or the other, that can affect how those flavors are expressed. We don't, like I said, we don't have good handles for control in the boil or in the keg. But what you can do is add, you know, a couple drops of acid in the keg. If you feel that this beer isn't bright enough, add a couple milliliters of acid. And I've done that with beers. I've added a little bit of lactic or phosphoric, and it did brighten up the beer considerably, just 2 milliliters. So that's an option.
One of the things I noticed in this question was, I don't use acids because, I don't like the flavor. But, I think small amounts of acids, I don't know that you're really tasting the flavor of the acid versus something else.
Mm-hmm.
And going to the extreme with mineral salt additions.
Yeah,
you'll definitely taste those as well, more than you will with the acid. So, what about that? Should he completely avoid acids or is
no? I think you've said it quite well. You need to take the middle road approach. You can't do all acid. You can't mm-hmm. do all minerals
mm-hmm.
because you will end up with a beer that's unbalanced.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do, if you've got a very hard water situation or very alkaline water situation and you're trying to brew pale beers, then you're going to want to add a little bit of acid to your sparge water, bump up your hardness and with some mineral additions, maybe add some acid to your mash to minimize the amount of mineral you have. You really shouldn't go over 100 ppm of any one mineral.
Uh-huh.
Just to keep the whole thing balanced.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's a balancing game.
It is.
Don't go crazy with one or the other.
Yeah. Don't overcompensate on something, because that's right. all you'll end up tasting.
Right. And I think if your beer is coming out harsh and acidic, or thin or something like that, start looking towards bacteria, wild yeast, things like that. I think that is a very common problem.
Right.
More so than water problems or, acid addition problems. Mm-hmm. I think, that is the most common problem that we see. And if you're getting, large bubbles and a thin beer and it's acidic, that's your problem. It's
contamination.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Cool. Well, let's take a short break, and when we get back, we'll get into more of your questions back after this.
When Blickman Engineering set out to design a great brewing stand, they knew it had to be strong, adaptable, and last for a lifetime. The top-tier brewing stand is now proudly available at BlickmanEngineering.com. It grows with your brewing skills and equipment. Start with 5-gallon coolers on its heavy-gauge stainless steel shelves. Then move all the way up to 30-gallon pots on the high-output burner tiers. Speaking of burners, the custom Blickman Engineering top-tier burners are extremely powerful, efficient, and amazingly quiet. They have safety stops to center your pot, and they'll last a lifetime and won't rust. The top-tier brewing stand allows virtually infinite combinations from traditional gravity systems to 2 tiers to completely horizontal. Configure your stand the way you want and have the freedom to change it at any time in the future. Your brewing stand should adapt with you, not force you to learn a new process. Visit BlickmanEngineering.com today to configure your top-tier brewing stand and to find a local Blickman retailer. You'll be surprised with all the flexible features and the competitive price. Start brewing with Blickman from the top tier.
Williams Brewing is your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and freshest ingredients and the best customer service in the business. Cut hours off your brewing sessions by using one of our 11 varieties of famous Williams malt extract. Our Williams Belgian Pale Extract is mashed with pure Belgian two-row malt and a small percentage of Belgian wheat malt for an authentic Belgian character you just can't get from other extracts.
Or check out our unique fermenters, 2.5-gallon kegs, paintball tank-based draft beer equipment, bottling aids, and much more. We even have our own line of precision hydrometers. Go to williamsbrewing.com to browse our vast selection. That's williamsbrewing.com. Orders placed by 3:30 p.m. Pacific time ship the same day. Brewing is easy. The Williams way.
Hey, what are you doing, man?
Writing a review of WLP 400.
What? You're reviewing yeast?
Yeah. White Labs has home brewer reviews of all their strains. Are you new to these interwebs? Check it out.
That's awesome.
White Labs, your source for great yeast, invites all brewers to visit whitelabs.com to read and write your own reviews of all their yeast strains. Get real-world tips and tricks from other brewers who have made the most of their vials and post your own experiences. It's another way White Labs brings you closer to the best yeast on the planet.
And send. There you go. You misspelled flocculate, dude.
What?
White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Downtown Joe's, located in the historic Oberon Building in beautiful downtown Napa, California, offers an award-winning brew pub experience from 8:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. every day. For 15 years at the corner of 2nd and Main, Downtown Joe's has been voted Best Night Spot 7 times and Best Brew Pub for the last 4 years in a row. Brewmaster Colin Kaminsky's handcrafted ales, like his Tail Wagon Amber Ale and Double Secret Probation IPA, are the perfect accent to riverside dining, live music, and a relaxing outdoor patio. Don't miss the Beer of the Month, special rotating taps, and the BN Army Member Special. Wear your BN gear, get 10% off your beer. Visit downtownjoes.com to make reservations, peruse their extensive calendar of events, or just read more about their fantastic beers. Come enjoy the fine beer, food, and music. Downtown Joe's, the award-winning brew pub, where you'll feel at home.
This is www.thebrewingnetwork.com.
Sit down next to it, grab yourself a paper towel, and watch those yeast have sex.
You're listening to the Brewing Network.
Back to the two guys that know how to turn beer into beer. This is Brew Strong.
All right, we're back. We're doing your Q&A session.
Turning fear into beer.
Turning fear into beer. You know, we could have another show, turning queer into beer. Right?
Yeah, good. Yeah, okay. Right.
Queer eye for the beer guy. Absolutely. No, we're knocking out questions that you have sent in either to BrewStrong at thebrewingnetwork.com or you participate in the chat room at thebrewingnetwork.com. You chat now, you get in, and you join in and participate with the other lost souls and ask your questions. Or you can call in, 888-401-BEER, and we'll talk to you on the phone. Absolutely. JP's capable of handling that. Justin, not so much. But JP, he's...
I'm all right with it.
He's got stones.
Well, if you're in the chat and you're listening live, PM me first, because yes, that's the only way I can really screen the calls. Since right, it's only me. So
there you go.
Speaking of the chat room, Greg loves beer, which sometimes
good
I read as
Greg.
Greg loves beer, but that's not right. Greg loves beer writes, hey, JP, here's a question. I ran 3 brews using the same WLP002 cake, English bitter, English IPA, and English barley wine. Are there other progressive beer groupings and specific yeasts that lend themselves to this type of progression?
Oh, yeah. This is how I used to do a lot of my... brewing for the national homebrew competition was I would look at a yeast and see if I could do a progression of beers, and I would chart that out as far as, all right, this beer splits into these 2 beers, and these 2 beers split into these 4 beers, and I would brew every freaking category just off of a few yeast.
Brilliant.
And that way I could get a lot of beers done quickly, because producing wort isn't that big a deal. It's, you know, having the yeast ready to, you know, rock and roll. That's a big deal. You know, as far as those English yeasts, you can do just about, you know, with like O2, you could do every English beer that there is. So you can do mild, you can do ordinary bitter, special bitter, strong bitter. You can do IPA. You can do Northern English Southern Browns. You can do Old Ale. You can do English Barley Wine. You can do all those with that same yeast. So there's a whole crowd of them. You know, as far as, you know, American beers, you can do, you could start out with, you know, you can do 01 or 10, or Weiss 1056 and do your American wheats and cream ales and things like that. Right. You know, I feel that those, you know, if you're looking for just placing in the crowd, you can do that, but, if you really want to be in a really tough competition, then you're going to need to do like the Kolsch yeast for the American wheats, and you need to do a lager yeast for the cream ales and things like that. But you can do, you know, American Pale Ale, American IPA, American Stout. You can do, you know, American Barley Wine. You can do Robust Porter. You can do, you know, American Amber. You know, there's a good chunk of American brown ale, a good chunk of beers you can do with that yeast. You know, for lagers, you can, and I've said for a long time, you can use almost any lager yeast for all your lagers. You know, get the lager yeast that you really feel mirrors the flavor that you love in lagers, and just use that for all of them. Yeah, you can go ahead and change up and down, but you're pretty good on most lager yeasts. And then it's just a matter of, you know, sorting them out by gravity and hop, you know, IBUs, and then go ahead and brew all your lager yeasts with one lager, or all your lagers with one lager yeast.
Now, what styles would you use, would you feel able to use Cal Common yeast for?
There's only two, really. So Cal Common, you know, steam beer yeast would be, you know, in a California Common, and the other would be Robust Porter.
Okay.
And, you know, it turns out quite nice. You know, it's one of those oddball yeasts. The same with, like, a wit beer yeast. You know, somebody was emailing, going like, well, I'm going to use WLP 500 at, you know, 52 degrees or something like that in order to make a wit beer. I'm like, well, you know, use a wit beer yeast, use some regular temperature. It's like, no, you know, Stan Hieronymus says you can use 500, and I want to, I'm like, well, fine, all right, you know, whatever. If you want to make the best possible wit beer, use a good wit beer yeast. If you want to make a, you know, a Hefeweizen, use a great Hefeweizen yeast.
Right.
If you want to make a great lager, use a great lager yeast. If you want to make a great steam beer, use a great steam beer. You know, these yeasts exist for a reason, and these styles really exist, you know, for a certain reason. You know, use the best yeast for those things. And he told me as well, I can use 500 for a lot more beers than I can 400. Sure, if that's what you're, you know, just use 001 for everything then. You know, every beer you make, and call it whatever beer you want to call it. But, you know, don't try and force one thing into another and say, well, you know, that's, you know, we should do, you know, 500 at 52 degrees, you know, in order to make this beer or that beer. It's like, well, all right, you know, just admit that you're kind of forcing the thing versus just doing the right thing for making that beer.
Right.
When you look at all these commercial brewers, they are not using, you know, one yeast to make, you know, all these different styles. That brewery that you're talking about, they make one beer and they use one yeast, and they, you know, that's what they do, and that's why it works. They're not trying to make, you know, brewery X, Y, and Z's beers as well.
Right.
You know, with the same yeast that, you know, so you can do it if, you know, if that's what you want to do, great, but it's, you know, just be aware that it's not going to be the best version possible that it could be.
You can play the par three with one club, but you can't play Augusta with one club.
Oh, there you go. You know, so, you know, the purpose of Brew Strong is, you know, to provide a lot of information and allow you to do whatever the heck you want. But, you know, our philosophy is, well, you should understand what it takes to make the best beer possible.
Yep.
And, you know, if you have that target in mind, it's the best wit beer possible, then, you know, it requires a Whitbeer yeast, and it requires, you know, a certain kind of malts, and it requires, you know, fermentation profiles and certain kind of spicing, and, you know, that's what's going to make, you know, just God's gift to Whitbeers. If you don't want to do that, that's cool, but, you know, we should all understand what it takes to do that and kind of respect that and not say, well, who cares? I'm going to do this and that or the other thing. So.
Right.
All right.
Great. Here's another one from Kim. I'm not going to have her call in because we don't have time to fall in love. What does that even mean?
Kimmy.
All things being equal, if you are too lazy to throw an airlock under your carboy, Andy, and insist on just using foil, could that potentially ruin your beer? So not having an airlock, but not having things fall straight in.
No. That's not the problem. All right. It's all this other lackadaisical. Spankadaisical.
Hey, that was an easy question.
Yeah.
Here's one from Beer Hog, which is kind of a general one. It goes, what is it about crystal malt that makes a beer sweeter? And why do the enzymes in the mash not break crystal sugars down the same as base malt sugars?
Okay. Well, crystal malt is malted and then converted in the hull during the malting process, or actually after the malting process in the kilning and roasting process. The reason the enzymes do not break down the crystal malt sugars in the mash is that the mash enzymes get stuck at the branch joints on the starches, or the sugars in this case. Then when they get within one sugar unit of a branch in the chain, they stop. Now, there are enzymes called limit dextrinase that can attack those branch joints and allow the alpha beta amylase enzymes to break down that starch or that large sugar chain further. But there's not as many limit dextrinase enzymes in the mash as there are alpha and beta amylase. So that's why you end up with long chain sugars left over. And let's see, what was the other part of the question?
You know, I erased it already.
Okay. So, crystal malt, why does it taste like it does?
And then why doesn't it break down?
Okay. Well, it doesn't break down because the enzymes can only get so far into the chain.
Great.
Okay. Anything to add, Jamil, or?
No, I think, you know, the takeaway is, like your mash that you do, you know, those grains, when they make the crystal malts, they are mashed in the hull. You know, so that whole process has happened. It's the same reason why, you know, when your mash temperature drops from 158 down to 150, why doesn't it all of a sudden become really thin?
Right.
Or really simple sugars? You know, it's the same sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's essentially what happens. Also, you know, there is some caramelization melanoidin development,
right.
You know, when they make these grains and they toast them and all that. And, you know, that really kind of
changes,
you know,
the chemistry of that.
Right. Changes the chemistry. It's no longer convertible. It's locked in. So that's why you get that sweetness. That's why you get those flavors.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Another good show. And, you know, I think we're going to do another one.
Yep.
I think JP is much tougher than Justin. Justin would be like, I can't do another show.
All right, good.
And Palmer and I, we got the stones the size of grapefruits.
Yes.
We're going to do it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, you've done an excellent job. I'm actually...
Well, thank you.
I'm thinking Justin shouldn't be back. I think...
you think it's me now?
I think you. Right. You're more attractive than he is, too, so
I appreciate
you got that going for you. Yeah. Well, and, you know, don't forget, please support our sponsors. You know, BlickmanEngineering.com. Guy, you know, he's really just trying to support the industry. So if you get a chance, check him out, BlickmanEngineering.com with two N's on Blickman. And, you know, send him an email. Tell him how much you appreciate it and how much it makes a difference in your entertainment life.
That's right.
Palmer and I, and he's paying for it, so you don't have to. So check that out. Check out the Brewing Network store, brewingnetwork.com/store. Lots of good stuff there. And, you know, everything you buy helps support the Brewing Network. Also, always remember, don't ever forget, you know, one of the things after a large holiday meal, sometimes my ass bleeds. Brew strong.
Brew strong, everybody.